Runners coming into the line for the Melbourne Cup. Prince of Penzance on the inside. Perfect day in Melbourne. Huge crowd at Flemington for the running of the $6.2 million Emirates Melbourne Cup.
Seems to me like I'm just scared of never feeling it again. But I know it's crazy to believe in silly things, but it's not that easy.
They're set to go. This is the Melbourne Cup 2015. Wait for a start. Mighty roar here at Flemington. The gates are back and they're racing in the Cup. Away they go. The United States has begun okay down near the inside with Prince of Penzance. And Max Dynamite has ridden hard by Notori to be nice and prominent. So is Sartorius. And further out is Who Shot the Barman. Coming over is Sky Hunter. Down the centre is Trip to Paris.
But I've got... me back to when we started high hopes. When you let it go, go out and start again high hopes. When it all comes to an end, but the world keeps spinning around.
They're inside the 800 metre mark in the Melbourne Cup. They're about to swing for home in the Cup of 2015. When they turn for home, Snow Sky has now gone to Excess Knowledge, who's fighting on. Criterion got flattened. Al Ivanhoe getting up on the inside. Here's Trip to Paris coming down the outside. Well back, Fame Game. He can't win from there. Prince of Penzance coming at them as they race with 150 metres to go. And Prince of Penzance has now hit the front. Prince of Penzance in front. It's a boil over. Prince of Penzance. Michelle Payne has won the Cup.
This is a Melbourne Cup horse. And he just felt like he would run the 2 mile out that strong, but far out, I didn't think he'd be that strong. He just burst to the front and he was powering through the line. That is just unbelievable.
Yeah, but I've got hopes. It takes me back to when we started. Hopes. When you let it go, go out and start again.
It's history at Flemington. Prince of Penzance, Michelle Payne, the first female to win the Melbourne Cup. Let's concentrate and celebrate on the Bolter, Prince of Penzance. The whole dimension of the race changes forever with Michelle Payne bringing Prince of Penzance home in the Melbourne Cup of 2015.
It's such a chauvinistic sport. I know some of the owners were keen to kick me off, Prince and John Richards and Darren stuck really solid with me. I just want to say to everyone else can get stuff because they think women aren't strong enough, but we just beat the world.
First female jockey has just won our greatest race. The greatest staying race in the world has been won by a female jockey on a horse called Prince of Penzance. Well, Michelle, high hopes. How's it been?
Just fills my heart with joy listening to that. And, you know, all the dreams you have and you know, what you work towards and train for every day and, you know, go to sleep dreaming about, just to hear that and to realise that it come true is just incredible.
You rode last night at Moonee Valley. Just tell us about your week. Where were you Thursday night?
Thursday afternoon, my sister and I, Margaret, flew up to Sydney and we had a lovely dinner at Admiralty House with Governor General Peter Cosgrove and his lovely wife and Prince Charles and Princess Camilla. We had a really nice dinner with amongst 60 people and it was great. Got to meet John Howard and his lovely wife and so many great people, so it was really nice.
Amazing what a Melbourne Cup can do, isn't it?
Incredible. It's changed my life forever and I'm just so grateful and hope that I can do good things from it in the future.
Do you think when Stevie, your brother, drew the barrier on Saturday night, that did you have some sort of feeling that maybe this was meant to happen?
I've had that feeling for a little while now. Always dreamed of riding in the Melbourne Cup and winning it, hopefully. But since I rode this horse, Prince Penzance, at Flemington as a three-year-old, and I've said it a few times, he just gave me a feeling that he could win the Melbourne Cup. And I know that sounds crazy to even say that now, but I just always had great faith in him. And all the way along, my feeling got stronger and stronger. And in the last two or three weeks leading up to it, I just sort of felt this vision that how it was going to work out, and I just prayed we drew a barrier one, two, or three so we could, you know, land in a position where I didn't have to jostle for a position, because I know he can get fiery and he can over-race. So our only hope was to draw an inside barrier, and then I thought the dream could come alive. Anyway, when we went to the barrier draw, I said to Stevie, try to draw barrier two, because I thought being barrier one was a bit greedy. I'd be happy with one, with two. And he said, no, I want to draw barrier one. I said, okay, yep, no worries. If you can, one or two, no pressure. Anyway, we were joking about it when we were sitting down waiting for our name to be called up, our number to be picked out. And anyway, I said, doesn't matter, just anyone. He goes, inside or outside? Around the outside or on the inside? I said, whatever one you just choose, whatever you want, doesn't matter. But if you get 22, put it back. No, just joking. Anyway, so I could see him sitting there pretty nervous for a fair while. And then I thought I'd better go out with him because he'll be a bit nervous. Anyway, he left me behind. I couldn't keep up. And when he drew out barrier one, and the way it all worked out with Jason Richardson and how he had, you know, the lead up as Stevie was walking up and said he wanted barrier one. And when he picked it up in like a second later, it was that was a fairy tale moment right then. And I thought, this has all coming together too well, but, you know, keep feet on the ground. Just, you know, it's still a fair way to go. The horse has got to get there safely. He's got to get there in good order. Keep your composure. And then, the night before was the first time I actually said to myself, thought about it, and I thought, just say you do win the Melbourne Cup. What are you going to say in your speech afterwards? So I had probably took me an extra 45 minutes to get to sleep, because I was thinking of what I wanted to say, who I wanted to thank. I didn't want to forget anybody. And then I switched off and said, okay, go to sleep now and don't think about it again. And had a really good sleep, woke up feeling absolutely fantastic, couldn't believe how good I'd felt, bouncing around but relaxed, not one little bit nervous. I just seemed all good, too good to be true. But anyway, same thing, you've got a job to do, got a routine. So I stuck to my normal routine, got to the races, and same thing, was so relaxed, was just quietly confident to myself. Darren Weir was pretty nervous before the start when he came into the mounting yard. I haven't seen him that nervous before, and thank God he didn't rub off on me, because that wouldn't have been too good. But luckily enough, I was able to hold my composure, and the prince was super relaxed walking around the mounting yard, because he can get a bit hot, and he had Stevie and Maddie, his main strapper, who looks after him all the time, both on either side. And everything was just falling into place beautifully. He walked down the race, went onto the track, handed off beautiful, lovely, in the right frame of mind. Behind the barriers, the same thing, so happy and relaxed. I was happy, he was happy. In the barriers, didn't even think I was in the Melbourne Cup, which is the most crazy part. I actually had given myself an option earlier in the day, pretending it was the Melbourne Cup. Like, this is just, you know, pretend you're in the Melbourne Cup. And I got nervous as hell in race three. So it was funny when the time came, didn't even think about it, was just chatting to Frankie Dettori and Barry too. And then, it just went from there. Everything in the race was working out pretty well. I didn't think about winning the race until the 600, and that's what I'd planned. I said to myself, you're not going to win it unless you get him into a rhythm and that he's breathing and travelling well. So don't even think about winning the race until you've got done, that's the first part of your job. And then from the 600, when I finally got to that point and I realised I was a big chance of winning, I'd also drilled it into myself, when you get to this point, if you are going well, if you don't keep your composure, you can lose the race in this point of the race. So that was another thing I really felt I had to do, was stay composed and keep him balanced. Don't go too early, don't go too late, just get it right. And so that was my whole plan, and thank God everything fell into place, and all the planning and all the thinking I'd done had worked out beautifully. So just, it is a fairy tale that everything come together, and I'm just so grateful.
What was the first thing that came into your mind as you went over the line?
I can't believe it. We won the Melbourne Cup. Like, it was just like, oh my God, it actually happened. And I just, yeah, just so grateful that for some reason God chose me to be the first female jockey to win the Melbourne Cup. Not even that that matters, being the first female jockey, I don't think. Just being myself, winning it from all the hard work and everything I put into it my whole life, had it all come together.
15 years of riding, and you've had the high times, the highest time. You've had the low times. You've been smashed up in falls. Did you ever, in the last, say, 15 years, think about not continuing, that you wanted to stop?
There was a time, a couple of times, but basically the way I like to look at life is that, you know, not poor me, why did this happen? I think everything happens for a reason. I think that when I fractured my skull, I was in a bit of a bad way for 3 months. But after that, I was 18 years old. I was able to travel, went to Europe, had a three-week holiday. If I hadn't have had that fall, I would have just been flat out riding my whole life, never experienced anything else in racing, out of racing, and, you know, getting to see the world. I traveled, you know, to all different countries, had a great time, met some great people. I believe that that's the best way to look at life is, you know, learn from your mistakes, make the most of every opportunity. You've had a fall, life stopped for a while, change direction, make the most of it, enjoy it, and then follow your dreams. I think that that's the absolute best way to live your life. And when I listen to my motivational song, which is All Fired Up, it's the words in that song are perfect, because it's, you know, you live and learn from your mistakes, and you've got to keep the faith. You know, it's what I train to every day leading up to the cup, and it's what I've lived my life by. And yeah, that's just the way I think everybody should look at life. Don't be all poor me, this has happened. Just, you know, it's life. Experience it and go from there.
The presentation of jockeys being introduced to the crowd, it's always spectacular, and the crowd react to different riders. From the broadcast box, when your name was read out, you got the biggest roar. Were you aware of that? You got clearly the biggest cheer.
No, I wasn't aware of that, actually, but that's nice to know. I guess, obviously, a lot of women out there are pretty excited to see a woman competing against the guys in our greatest race, so that's really nice that it's recognised.
You're the fifth jockey to ride in a Melbourne Cup? Fifth female?
Yes, I believe so.
What was it like the first time, because you rode for the great man Bud Cummings, and it was LA Wonder?
Yes, that's right. That was obviously a dream come true in itself, to ride in the Melbourne Cup for the first time, and for the Cup's greatest trainer, Bud Cummings, couldn't have been any better. Unfortunately, the experience was taken away a little bit because I had to ride 50 and a half, so I was, you know, working really hard at that. So I didn't get so much to enjoy the lead up as much as, you know, any other time because of that. But at the same time, having that experience and riding in that race at that age, at that time, was just a dream come true in itself, as I said. And I'm so glad I'd had that experience leading into Prince of Penzance. I just feel it probably just took the edge off, probably did take the edge off my nerves. And it was probably, I feel, part of the whole fairy tale that, you know, it all come together. And I feel that if I had have won the Melbourne Cup any younger than what I am now, I might not have been able to handle it the way I have. So I just feel that everything's just come together, and it was fate.
You're handling it superbly. Did you ever imagine that what would happen post-race? Did you imagine that you'd be in Sydney, you know, mixing with royalty? Did you imagine that maybe you might be going to the United States to appear on Ellen's show? Maybe they might make a movie. Can you get your head around all that?
Absolutely not. I thought it would change my life, but not to this extent. It's been absolutely incredible. But yeah, look, I just can't believe it. And I can't believe that I'm the lucky one that gets to go everywhere. I'm trying to take everybody in my life somewhere with me where they can enjoy it as well. But I was just telling my sister in Sydney, I feel a bit guilty that I'm the lucky one that gets to go everywhere. So, yeah, I definitely didn't see the extent of this coming.
And you now become like the flag bearer, not only for women, but for men, and particularly through racing and people that want to achieve. because of your philosophy of, you know, don't give up. You can still do it.
Well, that's why I believe part of the reason it maybe it happened is to give people inspiration and hope, because so many people have said to me that it has given them inspiration, even for anything. Like my doctor, Dr. Paul Mulkerns, he was saying, you know, it's given him inspiration to get fit again and get back to the gym, and even anything that people were going to change is fantastic. And I just hope that it's all for the better, and, you know, it makes everybody's life, you know, happier and better if it can in any way.
Any regrets about what you said post-race? Like, you know, I don't know how you actually held it all together, about the get stuff comment, which has had tremendous publicity, and I think everyone's cheering for you because of that comment. From where I sit, you know, people just think that was beautiful. It was so raw. It was so Australian. What's your take on it now when you look back?
There's two ways you can look at it, obviously. Like, from my perspective as a jockey, I guess you get frustrated with owners and people who want to take you off, because you do the best you absolutely can for them, and sometimes things don't go right because it's racing. It's not going to be a fairy tale every time. And I guess it's from my point of view, frustrating that they could feel like whipping you off in a second for somebody else who's done no work with the horse or doesn't really care as much. That's probably something that's why I said it. But on the other hand, since I've made the comment, I guess I say that they do pay the money, the owners, and they should, you know, get it some sort of say, and are entitled to it. So there's two ways of looking at it, but obviously I look at it from my side because I see all the work that goes into it. So it wasn't all just directed as chauvinism. It was more loyalty, I guess, in racing, and it's happens to the guys as well as the girls. And I just wanted to point that out, but it probably didn't come out in as best way as I wanted, because I only had a short time to say it. But if I could explain more, that would be what I was trying to say.
I think some people actually took the chauvinistic line and, you know, probably didn't think seriously about it. I still think the crowd's right behind you, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a male-dominated sport, and that's why I did say it. And I know it's changing very slowly, but hopefully it speeds things up a bit. Because, like, for instance, say if you're unlucky on a horse, they'll say, oh, she was unlucky, we'll put one of the guys on. And then one of the guys is unlucky and they say, oh, it was unlucky, you know, bad luck. That's where it's sort of coming from a bit with the chauvinistic remark. So I just hope that changes, because at the end of the day, there's one winner in every race. There's so many hard luck stories. And I just hope that in the future they don't blame it because it was a female jockey. You know, what I'm trying to explain.
Special guest is Michelle Payne. This is Your Racing Life, and we're talking to the record breaker, Michelle, a Melbourne Cup winning rider. We'll be back after this break. Michelle, you're one of 11, and we know the story now about losing mum when you're 6 months old. You're now 30. You turned 30 late September. You never knew your mum. A prayer to mum before you jumped away in the Melbourne Cup?
Yep, absolutely. It's a little prayer to her, which I do when I feel like I need to. Not every time, but sometimes you know, it's nice to feel they're there with you when you feel like you need them. And for some reason, Bart popped into my mind at that time as well, so I feel as though maybe he was a big part of making it happen as well.
Yeah. Bart, what did Bart describe you as? She goes, all right, she's a pretty little thing.
Something like that.
Extraordinary. 11 children, and your dad was a cross-country rider and was very good on horses in New Zealand going way back, and that's where it all started?
Yeah, he was a jumps jockey in New Zealand and travelled to England and Ireland. And then he was a horse trainer and had a horse, good horse called Our Paddy Boy, which moved the family from New Zealand across to Australia. So that's how we all ended up here. The eldest 8 were born in New Zealand, and the youngest 2, Steve and I, were born in Australia.
And your mum, Rosa Maria, came from Switzerland.
Yeah, she did. Their family moved from Switzerland to New Zealand when she was 15, and they made her change her name from Rosa to Mary. I don't know why. And that's, yeah, eventually they met, my mum and dad met in New Zealand years later.
The children came along, Bridget Maria, 1969, Therese, 1970, Marie, 1971, Bernadette, 1973, Patrick in 1975. Mary had five children in 6 years, and all those jockeys, all of them would be jockeys and ride city winners. Didn't they have TV?
Good Catholic family.
What tales do you sort of remember that your older sisters have told you about the early days in New Zealand? Do you get any recollection of that?
Yeah, so it's quite funny, actually. So the first three born were pretty spoiled. They had everything, speech lessons, ponies, went to pony club. They were able to do absolutely anything they wanted, like normal children, I'd say, in everyday life. And I didn't know any of this until I got older, because by the time it come around to us, we had no time for anything. So it's pretty funny to hear how their life started out in comparison to the younger ones, because I know that mum and dad didn't plan on having the amount of children they had. So their life was, a bit more glamorous, I would say, as young kids. But then it changed, obviously, as they got older. They were made to work, the more children with.
After the ones I mentioned, Bridget, Therese, Marie, Bernadette, then Patrick, and then Margaret arrived. And 15 months later was Michael, who only survived for 3 days.
Yeah, that's right. He had a hole in his heart and unfortunately passed away after 3 days. And it's quite an amazing story. I think I was born on the same day as Michael, and that's why I was named after him. And I think that's a pretty special story. He's said in my prayers as well as mum.
And when you moved to Australia, you said your dad came here with a horse called Paddy Boy, who eventually was sold to Robert Sangster and took the name of our Paddy Boy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So that was the story of how we got out here. And I think Robert Sangster bought another horse off Dad too, because Paddy Boy wouldn't go without his mate, so he got a package deal.
I think it was a horse called Gentle Joker or something like that. Wasn't much good.
It wasn't much good, but I think he paid a pretty reasonable price, so Dad did quite well out of it.
And that gave Dad a chance to set up. And I read in Tony Kneebone's book on your family where your dad spoke of having 8 kids in the car and coming back from racing Paddy Boy in Queensland, and the car having trouble going up the hill because he had 2 horses in the float and all these kids in the back.
I could imagine that. I wasn't alive at that time, but I did hear stories of Dad just pulling up and making our Paddy Boy and his mate a paddock kit anywhere they pulled up for the night, which is a pretty funny story with a stallion and a lot of kids. And it would have been quite funny to watch.
You lost mum tragically just on 29 years ago. You were 6 months of age. What an amazing time it must have been. What a tragic time it must have been. You'd have no recollection, but the family then had to bond together, and your dad insisted, even with maybe perhaps the children might have been going to relatives just to give him a hand, but he insisted that everyone stay together. What an amazing man he is.
He is an amazing man, and the older I get and the more time I have to think about, what he did. And I often sit back and imagine the day when, they came to his door and said that my mum had been killed. You could just imagine the feeling that would be. And my dad said he did lose a stone and a half or something when it happened because he couldn't eat, but he just so strong. He just dealt with it. He said, well, it was one of those things. He couldn't sit around and dwell on it. He had all these kids looking up at him, so he just, did what he had to do, and we all had to work. Everyone had to pull their weight. Don't know how one of us wasn't lost along the way somewhere, but a few times we got left at church or the supermarket. But what he did, we can't believe. But when you do meet my dad and his attitude towards life, you probably would understand how he was able to do it. And I think a big part of that is faith that he has in God. And, we used to have to go to church every Sunday and stop for prayers all the time when we were sitting around at home, driving the car, anywhere we were. So that was a big part of how he got through it, I think.
The faith got him through?
Yep, 100%.
Bridget, who was the eldest, was in an apprenticeship at about 16 years of age when Mum passed away.
Yeah, she was. So she was the first one to start riding, and she actually moved away from home not long after Mum passed away and went to Mornington for her apprenticeship. And then Therese probably just had to take over as the role as Mum. I remember at school, in primary school, when we'd have the fete and you'd buy your Mother's Day gifts, I'd buy them for Therese every year. She was just our mum, basically. She organised everything. Everyone had a job. She just dealt with it like Dad, got on with life, and just an incredible person. And she's been my role model growing up from when I was a kid, and I'm so grateful to have such a great role model.
Yeah. And Therese had very good success in town riding, and I remember one day her horse, the blinkers actually went over the horse's head at Moonee Valley, and the horse actually was, you know, frightened by that, came over the outside rail right there in the home straight and finished up into the subway underneath, and she was pretty badly hurt that day.
Yeah, that was actually the day I was born, to be a funny story, because they blamed her for bringing on the pregnancy, you know, with the scare for Mum, which is pretty incredible. But thankfully she was okay. She had a broken collarbone, I think, and was maybe a fractured vertebrae, but she was really lucky to escape the fall.
And Paddy, Waite sort of beat Paddy, but he had a stellar time in the saddle, like, you know, teaming up with horses like Northerly. And was it Soho Square that he won the Doncaster on?
Yeah, that's right. When he was 16 years old, he was lucky enough to pick up the ride on Soho Square, and that probably kicked off his career, as well as I think he won on Pontorno for Freedman's, which I don't know which one was first. I think it might have been Soho Square, but he was probably my idol growing up, watching any jockey ride. I just used to love watching him ride, and I do remember my dad used to get a bit angry at him because he always would be back in the field, and I guess I ride most of my horses a bit similarly because of that. But he was just a beautiful rider, great hands, and not overly vicious in the finish, but got the best out of them, and I guess I've tried to sort of emulate myself on him.
Your dad had some really good handy horses. I remember a terrific old horse called Flying Eskimo, and I remember Miner's Man racing in Paddy Payne's colours. And you all got a turn. You're probably not you, but all your sisters got a turn to ride those horses.
Yeah, that was great. They were great old horses. Dad must have had a nice keen eye for a horse, because he picked out some pretty handy ones along the way for cheap money, which was pretty handy for bringing us kids up, I guess. But yeah, it was obviously very fun growing up, watching all the kids ride and be successful and striving towards that.
You lost your elder sister in 2007 in Bridget. Was that the result of a fall? Was it sort of complications after a fall?
It was, yep. It was a good while after. But, it was... no one really thought about that it happened from a fall, I guess. It was just one of those things in life again that happened. And obviously it was devastating because it was unexpected and probably the saddest for my dad, I guess, because when you lose obviously one of your children, it's not how it's meant to be, and he kept saying that over and over again. And but it was just once again that you have to move on and live life and deal with it. And we all got together, and that's the greatest thing about having a big family, that everybody got together and stayed strong. Dad was like, nobody's allowed to cry, we don't have cry, we don't need to, you know, shed tears, but obviously in your own time that was going to happen. But that's probably the best part about having a big family, is sticking together.
And he was still able to provide, you know, get that winner occasionally and still, you know, put food on the table. And he's got all these jockeys around him, boys and girls, and you'll be able to bond together and just keep going.
Yeah, he had to buy a dairy farm. We bought a dairy farm when I was 7 years old, and we moved up there, which was up near Echuca. And the younger five kids lived up on the farm and had to work milking the cows morning and night and feeding the calves, etc. We had a couple of horses up there just to, you know, teach us to ride and everything. And the older kids stayed in Ballarat and looked after the four older kids looked after the horses and the team at Ballarat and kept Dad's training business going to give them rides. So it was one big team effort.
When you look at the girls, you and your sisters coming through the riding ranks, more often than not, the jockey's room would be a caravan. Like, you weren't spoilt, were you?
By the time I came around, luckily enough, it wasn't too bad. We've had a lot of upgrades since then, but it wasn't as bad as what the girls older they had to go through. But yeah, look, it was part of life, and it was quite fun actually being able to ride with my older sisters and enjoying the jockey's room with them.
I think there's a race, was a race at Ballarat where five or six of you all rode in the one race. Might have been just pre your time.
Yep, I think I was 13 years old when they had that race. I think there's five of them and they trifected the race, so that was good. It would have been embarrassing if they didn't run the first three.
And that was at Ballarat, the hometown. That was pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. Very proud to be a part of the Ballarat community, and that race was very special.
We're taking a break. This is your racing life with the cup-winning rider, Michelle Payne. Back with Michelle Payne. Tell us about Stevie.
Well, Stevie and I were always the little kids, and funnily enough, Stevie was just treated as normal because basically we didn't know much different anyway, and Dad treated him as normal, so we just did whatever Dad did. And I didn't know any different, so I just followed everyone else's lead. But when we were growing up, Stevie, he used to stutter a lot, and Dad used to tease him about his stutter, and no one could understand him because he didn't speak well, but I always knew what he said because we spent every second together, so I was like Stevie's translator for a fair while until he started speaking a bit clearer. But the funniest thing about it now is that he speaks in his interviews clear as day, which is so great, because if it had been even 5 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to understand him. So he just continues to grow. He's just an absolute delight. Every time you're around him, you're just instantly in a good mood, and his smile is so infectious that even if you just see a photo of him, it makes you smile. He's an absolute blessing to our family, and that's what Dad said our whole life.
The scenes of going back to Ballarat with Stevie and the trophy and the number 19 jacket on, I think they'll stay in people's minds forever, you know, not topping what the scene was like when you jumped out of the saddle on Melbourne Cup Day and embraced him. That's an image that went around the world, and it's an image that no one will ever forget.
No, and it was so special, and we're so grateful because, Darren, we are for allowing him to be in such a special position. And not only that, Maddie, who looks after Prince of Penzance every day and has done such an amazing job standing back and letting Stevie, you know, Stevie and I have that moment, is something that I'll always be grateful to her for. And she obviously, you know, it would have been very special for her too, but she just said no. She said, thank God Stevie was there. I would have been a mess. So thankfully it worked out well for everybody. But being able to see him when I got off and he had tears in his eyes, the first time I've ever seen him emotional, was pretty extraordinary and nearly made me start to tear up. But then it was such a whirlwind, I didn't get a chance really. So thankfully for that, I was able to hold it together.
What did he say to you?
Well done.
Well done. Did he have his money on?
He had his money on. He was wrapped. He had $10 each way.
And he's loved being a part of it. And it just must be so special for you to share this with someone so close. There's a bond like no other between you and Stevie.
Absolutely. When I sort of sit up, like in front of Ballarat, where we went up to the community and they'd shut off the street, and I just sat back and watched Stevie talking in front of the crowd, and it was like he was like meant to be a superstar. He's sitting up there making them laugh, telling jokes, like it was just hilarious. So it's just been probably the best part of the whole thing.
I'm told that Darren Weir is fantastic with people that may have a disability, that he gives them a chance, which doesn't surprise me. He's a decent bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. If they're capable and, you know, can do the job, it doesn't seem to waver him at all. And he has given Stevie so many opportunities along the way, and it's just made his life so much happier, and we can't thank him enough for giving him that opportunity. And not only that, just, you know, treating him as any other worker down there.
And what about the Prince, the horse? He's had chips taken off his knees, I think. He's had colic. He, you know, I suppose it's probably many times you never thought he'd get back to the track.
Yeah, he's had four surgeries, and I ran into Ian Fulton and Andrew Cuss from Ballarat Equine Clinic at Darren Weir's party on Sunday, and they just are in amazement of the horse. Like, and Ian Fulton was saying, you know, it was only in February his last surgery was the colic attack where he had a piece of his intestines removed, and they were just in awe of him, I think. And I remember when Darren Weir told me that, you know, Prince is sick, he's had a colic attack, and he said they don't usually come back from that, and I was like, yeah, but he's tough. And he was like, yeah, I seemed to be the only one, I think, who thought he could do it, but I didn't realise the extent of how you know, it's pretty hard thing for them to come back from. But he was better. He came back a better horse, and all of us couldn't believe it. And once again, it felt like the story was just piecing together and falling into place.
Is he a kind horse? What sort of horse is he?
He's a beautiful, affectionate horse. He loves you giving him affection on the ground. And riding him is a bit fiery, but he listens to you, I believe. I always talk to him, and you can see him. He gets really tense, but then he gets his calmness over and puts his head down and starts to relax. But once he gets into a situation of a race, especially with blinkers on, it just gets him competitive, and he's a little bit hard to contain sometimes. So that was a bit of my concern when he missed the start to give him a squeeze into a position, because he doesn't take much at all to switch him on. So I just had to be prepared to, you know, get into saddle and to sit there and hold him for the majority of the race.
Michelle, when we look at the sport you're in, and it's arguably one of the most dangerous sports to compete in, how tough is it? You just take the Melbourne Cup away. How tough is it when you're out there in the field and you might have 14 blokes, or, you know, young men to older men, and, you know, world-class jockeys around you? Will you handle that well on Melbourne Cup day? But how hard is it?
I don't really find it too hard at all myself. I've grown up youngest of 10 kids, so I don't really... not intimidated by them or anything. I believe I've got my place out there. Probably the hardest part is juggling your life. You've got to obviously work super hard to get rides, whether you're male or female. Probably a bit harder as a female, but any guy will tell you, especially in the last year, how hard it's become. The amount of jockeys there are, the amount of competition, and the level of competition is just so high that you've just got to work and work and work to get the opportunities, and then you've got to make the most of them opportunities, even though you're probably buggered from doing all the work to get them. So it's a real juggle of your life, but when you are, say, coming into the spring, it basically takes over your life, and you have to let it, because otherwise you can't compete at the top level. So it's really grueling, and it's a test of your strength, I think, and it's keeping yourself positive and having confidence, because it's so easy to fall into "it's too hard," but you've just got to keep showing up, keep doing the best you can, and the wheel always keeps on spinning. That's my favorite thing to say. You just got to keep on it, and hopefully it'll come around to you at some stage, and it usually does.
It's a high danger sport, as I mentioned. We've lost young lives in Caitlin Forrest and Simone Montgomery, and you see, you know, so many girls particularly have been smashed up, they're in chairs, etc. You must have to put this out of your mind when you go out there.
Yep, definitely. You can't go out there thinking about that, because even when you just sit around talking about it with other jockeys, it's obviously, you can't help but think about it and think about their families, and then you think about your family if it happened to you, and you try not to let it come into your mind, otherwise it would probably ruin your career. It's just a part of the job, and it's something that, unfortunately, it happens, and we can't do nothing about it.
When you had the last bad fall, was it 2012?
I think it was, yeah. That was, there was two in a year, which scared me, because I was thinking somebody was trying to tell me something and I wasn't listening. Yeah, I was able to come back from that. I didn't knock my confidence when I came back to riding. It was just my family were pretty concerned, you know, that it just seemed to keep happening over every couple of years. I'd have a bad injury. So that was the toughest part, was, you know, keeping them happy and myself happy. But I just wanted to, you know, get to a level where I felt I'd done my very best and I could give it away happily. And they'll say that, why can't you do that now? But I feel as though I've done all this hard work to get into a position where I can, you know, hopefully gain some good rides from it, and to give it away would be a real shame. So I think that I'll feel when I know I'm ready to give it away, and that doesn't feel yet. So I'll just keep going along until the time feels right.
You become a role model. You were a role model. Probably you weren't aware of it, but particularly now with this win, and even young stars like Caitlin Mallion, and you are the people. You know, you're the person they look up to. And I'm sure when you look at the intake of apprentices coming through the academy now, 50% or more are females. So you are the one they'll look to.
Yeah, it's pretty special. Obviously just love helping the younger girls come through. I think that we've got a great system in place with the apprentice school. That it's improved all the time, and even so much better than when I was an apprentice. So hopefully that gives them every opportunity to be as good as they can be from the very start. And I'd love to give my two bobs worth, and I do when I can, because I think that being there and done it, you know, especially as a female, what you can improve on. And I think I could have done it better when I was young. So I just really try to help them as much as I can, and yeah, hopefully I think there'll be some future stars in amongst them.
I was just thinking on my way here to talk to you that if you all the family gather around the table at up at Dowling Forest at home for the Christmas lunch, you could actually produce three Melbourne Cup trophies, couldn't you?
Yeah. It was pretty special, actually. On the night of Emirates night, Brett Preble, Kieran McAvoy, and myself, we all had a quiet cheers in the back room, you know, that we'd all won a Melbourne Cup. So that was obviously very special, and, something that I'm very proud of.
Where do you think this is going to take you now?
I'm not really sure. I'm happy just to make the most of every opportunity, and, yep, just I'm not sure. I just want to be the best role model I can for the youngsters coming through and for our sport.
It's pretty important to get some form of management in place now, because everyone will want a piece of you. You know, now the image of what you did and the vision, it's incredible where it reaches. You know, it's global now, and the world knows who Michelle Payne is, and, you know, you've won the applaudance of so many, particularly women. But it's sports fans. You know, it might have been 100-1, but it was only $65 on the tote, so there was a lot of followers, and you know, the impact. I think really in modern time it's probably the greatest win that racing's ever had.
I heard that Ray Murray said that, and that's just so special to hear that people say that, because while it is a great win for females, obviously, and well for me, but I just feel that, you know, I just feel so lucky that God chose me.
Do you want to separate the female thing away from jockeys?
It doesn't worry me. I just see myself as a jockey, but I hope it gives hope to females, so it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter being either way.
Does Royal Ascot call now?
Yeah, well, I'm actually heading over there for the Sugar Cup, which will be fun, and I'd watched with eager eyes that hopefully one day I get invited to go and compete on the girls' team, which is, it's going to be pretty special. Next August I'm going over there, so I can't wait for that.
What sort of feedback have you had personally from people around the world, particularly other jockeys and people in racing globally?
Oh, I feel that it's just everyone's so happy for me, and even the other jockeys, like my friends, that guys or girls, they're so wrapped, and that's probably made me the most happy of anything. And people that come up to me with Down syndrome children, and they just say, thank you so much for what you and your brother have done. It's given us so much hope and happiness, and those two things are so special. I can't even begin to describe.
Today, pretty sentimental, because the old guy Precedence, who ran in five Melbourne Cups, was it? He's coming up to his sixth, I think it was, this year, and didn't make the final cut. Maybe you pushed him out. Maybe you kept him out of it. He runs today, and he was trained by the great Bart Cummings, and he'll run for the final time. We don't think that fairy tales happen too often in racing. Can it continue?
Who knows? That's the great thing about life, and the great thing about racing is you never know. So that'd be absolutely wonderful if it did, but we'll find out, I guess.
When you reflect back on that first Tuesday in November, who do you really want to thank?
I want to thank Darren Weir, number one, for giving me the opportunity and having faith in me. He's absolutely number one person to thank, because without him, would not have won the race on Prince of Penzance. Prince Penzance, for being as tough as he is and as good as he is, all of the owners, but my family, I'd have to say, my family has been the best part of my life since forever and for my career, because would never have got to this point, I don't think, without them. They've, you know, shaped me into being tough and being able to handle it. And you know, my dad, he taught us to have a great work ethic from a young age, and I think that's probably the main reason I've been successful, so can't thank them enough.
Will the Prince come back next year?
I think he will. I think he pulled up fantastic after the race. First time he's gone to a spell without an operation, so it's got to be good. So, yeah, hopefully he can, and who knows.
Thanks for spending time, because you provided us on that first Tuesday in November with one of the great moments in sport. You're a part of it. You're a part of history. You've created a record that stood for 155 years, so it was so special.
Thank you very much.
Michelle Payne.